Good morning, and welcome to How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything. Good afternoon, Chris.
Good morning, Bob.
All right, our assignments from this weekend. From Friday, think of a person, situation, experience from your past that you can't seem to let go of. Write a letter of closure expressing what you need to express in order to put this issue to rest. And then Saturday, is there something you did in the past that is deemed unacceptable? Revisit that incident and see it through the eyes of compassion. Rewrite the narrative of the experience from this perspective. And finally, Sunday, recall a time when you let go. Write and/or draw that experience. All
You know,
righty.
either any one of those three would have been a big weekend, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
Put them all together, and that's pretty impressive. So, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely is. All righty. Let's go. So here is our first caller. You're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. This is Risa.
Hi, Lisa. Is that Lisa?
Risa with an R, but otherwise
Risa,
pronounced
okay, great.
Risa.
All right, good. Hi, Risa.
Hi. So I'll just talk about the question that we had yesterday about letting go,
Okay.
because that's what's on the top of my mind right now.
All right, sounds great.
So I recounted a story, and I wrote it down. And then what I got to about that was that being that process of letting go was also a process of being comfortable in the unknown or being vulnerable to others, which was a place which usually was a big sort of conditioning sort of swooped in and took over. And so now that I can see that happening and operating, it's really interesting. It kind of feels like it's a continual exercising of a muscle that gets stronger to be able to kind of exist in that uncertainty and seek it out.
Wow, that's really big, isn't it? Yeah, so in looking at this letting go, kind of recalling a time when you did let go, right, that a lot came in to assist you to kind of see that process more clearly, right? You could see what conditioning was up to in many ways, right? That you're held hostage by not being, you know, where conditioning wants to go with it is to not have you be vulnerable to others or not have it be exposed to relation to others, right? And then just being okay with living in the mystery. And then seeing that is like, that's the ticket to the kingdom, isn't it? In
Yeah,
some ways.
absolutely. Yeah, I
Absolutely. So
mean.
that's the way you're controlled by conditioning, right? And so now, anytime you get a whiff of that's what's going on, then the light bulb comes on. It's like, oh, this is the place. This is the spot where, I can let go.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that something that I've been looking at a lot this whole year in the year-long retreat is there like theoretically I know this, or like I've heard this idea before, right? We sort of talk about it every day in the retreat. But when I find, hold on, there's just a car. When I find that with each of these exercises, I uncover a small moment in which I can see that I was being that an experience of suffering that I can recollect was this controlled moment by conditioning. Or when I can see how in the past I would have assumed something, that I understood something of somebody else's experience or understand or projection of me, like now that I can see those in small, minute examples,
yes,
somehow the experience of freedom becomes like inversely related to those small moments. Like it just, the smaller the moments that I see it in, the bigger the freedom feels.
Oh my,
So that even if I know something, or like I continue to expose myself to this theoretical idea, somehow just knowing it doesn't diminish any of the power of it. It's realization over and over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was, as you were laying that out, I was looking at the title of our year-long retreat, right? So how you do anything is how you do everything. And in that same way that you just mentioned, then it doesn't matter how little it is, right? Because conditioning is going to want to say these little tiny awarenesses don't really amount to anything. But I think the place you're pointing at is, no, if how I do anything is how I do everything, then even in these little tiny throwaway moments, you know, all of how I cause myself to suffer is right in front of me. And there's a great deal of power in that.
Yeah, well, it's like the smaller the moment, it gets down to this building block. So the precision of perception for the mechanism of how conditioning is working becomes clear. So the smaller the moment, it's like you're getting to this atomic level where you can really see how it gets built up into an illusion. And if you have a familiarity with the shapes of those atoms, then when you can see that start to happen on a smaller level, you can catch on so much quicker. It's like the smaller the moment, the earlier you can catch it.
Yeah. Yeah, that analogy is a great one. And so if I'm looking at a bunch of molecules that are made up out of a bunch of atoms, it's much harder to kind of see how that's all working together. But what you're saying is if you can parse those out into those individual atoms and at that level kind of in the clarity or the starkness of being in that moment, right, then we can really see how suffering gets put together at a really elemental level, kind of the beginning of the
manhood.
You know,
exactly.
What's happening right out of the box, right out of the moment? Here's the first thing that conditioning does to manipulate the attention, right? Instead of coming to, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 steps later, then we're coming to right at that very initial moment in which conditioning is has just shown up on the scene. Yeah.
Exactly. It's like sort of like making a process map, where when you're laying out the process map, it's built out of all of these small moments.
Uh-huh.
And when you see them like laid out in front of you, then when you start to hear the voices in your head saying those things, it's like, oh wait, this is part of a bamboozle. I know this is part of a bamboozle.
Right.
Instead
Time to pay
of
attention.
Just hitting a
yeah.
Yeah, instead of just hitting a hard wall 10 minutes later and being like, here I am again, I just can't possibly do this thing that I care so much about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just like never even have to, like the wall never gets built. And then you don't have to hit your head against it.
Right. Yeah, that's
Because you see the bricks being stacked up and you're like, oh no, let's take them down. Let's not do this.
Right, drop that brick, please.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the way you started us off, Risa, it feels like that's a great example of it. So there's the experience of letting go, which we could just, you know, there's the label, like we talk about it, and then what conditioning wants to do is go, oh, yeah, well, that's letting go, so what? Or, you know, there it is. And then in the way that you approached it was like, well, what is it, what it was actually going on there? And then you could really get down to that, as you're describing it, that kind of really basic level of, oh, I see, there's discomfort on conditioning's part with being exposed. There's one thing. And the other one is there's discomfort on conditioning's part in terms of being in a mystery, in terms of not being in control. And so now we really are at that level where we can, you know, we can really see the pieces of the puzzle to how I cause myself to suffer are right there in front of us. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, when I feel out of control, right, which is all an illusion in itself, then this starts, the suffering starts to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I've already identified that that's a puzzle piece.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
and then with the puzzle
game.
Piece, it sounds like you've also identified, well, I mean, we're in a place of awareness at that point, but you've identified the go-to place, right, the practice place in that, and the redirect of the attention, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Very cool. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Risa. And Chris, I just seem to say, so that whole conversation seemed like a perfect understanding of like how practice works or functions,
uh-huh.
right? That we start with, like someone says, well, how you do anything is how you do everything. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. And then I work with it, and I get to have an experience of that, seeing
yeah.
you know, a particular process played out with different pieces of content. And then I get that, I have that experience, and then when I see that process again, I get to see, as the two you're talking about, it, maybe at a deeper level. So what happens before that last place I saw in the process?
Uh-huh.
And it just, yeah, it's just, and it really kind of underlines for me just that place of like the practice of it is what actually is the powerful piece of it.
What makes the difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The image that always comes up for me is the one of a person sitting by a lake reading books about swimming.
Uh-huh.
And, right, and that's all, that all seems well and good, right? But if one never actually gets up and gets in the water, then it can be kind of a detriment, like it's not actually helping at all. But if you are going to get in the water, then that's a great place to start. And then once we do get in the water, you know, that's where we say that's where the rubber meets the road, right? where we really do get a sense of, oh, so that's what they were pointing to at that when they kept saying, how you do anything is how you do everything. That's what they were pointing to. And, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right, great. All righty. Let's see here. Is our next caller. You're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. This is Alicia from Seattle calling.
Hi, Alicia.
Hello. Well, that was really, that conversation was really helpful for me, because when I did this exercise, the thing that came up, regarding that, this question, recall a time when you let go.
Okay.
What a lot of this year, this retreat this year, what comes up for me when these questions are posed is, well, I don't know. I don't know. You know, it's like a fog is my first, often
uh-huh.
the first step. And then
uh-huh.
and then the second, it seems that my process, like with answering this one, it's like we got to think of big things, the big, you know, so I could only come up with one thing, you know, that I thought, well, I did let go that time, but wow, it was under duress, not, you know, it was like, but that was a very like, sort of big and big moment in my life. And so this, the last caller, you know, this last conversation, it was really interesting to me, because it's like, well, what if, say, I take this question again today, recall a time when you let go, and I just, you know, kind of hold it through my day and look at how I, there have to be times when I'm, I let go.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
yeah, exactly.
I just, you know,
more suspicious.
I mean, but
yeah.
Yes, exactly. I am suspicious. And so that idea of the kind of, you know, looking at the small moments, and again, it does make intellectual sense to me that, again, I think Bob referred to it like, of course, how we do anything is how we do everything. Of
mm-hmm.
course, that's true. And yet that experience, what I'm being told, or at least what I saw in this, is what I'm being told is, you can't really know. You don't, we don't, It's too big. You don't know.
So that's the fog, Alicia. That's the fog that comes in. Okay.
Yeah, the fog. No, yeah, we don't know. And so now it's cut off. I'm cut off from seeing when I do have these experiences, as I must, probably every hour. I mean, I don't know what frequency, because who knows how long I'm really paying attention. But
5 or 6 seconds, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I just really, I really appreciated that conversation, because I think I can see even here, like, the big story that I got was, well, you don't let go.
Exactly. Yeah, that's essentially the message that's in the fog for you, isn't it?
Yeah. That's just helpful to see.
Yeah. And then, because anytime the fog comes in, then what you're supposed to do is just agree with it, right? Well, we don't know. And then move on, right? But you're catching on to the idea that, well, actually, the message there is you don't let go, which, of course, conditioning would love if you would just stay there and believe that, right? And then, in the way that you're laying it out, then you're catching on that that's a lie. You're suspicious that the letting go happens way more frequently, right? You've got some big examples, which it sounds like they can get through the fog. When you recall them, then you can kind of go, oh, yeah, that is a place. And now the approach is, well, let's just, we're looking to feel our way through that fog, right? So now let's just keep this on the side of awareness as I go through the day and see what drops in, see how many of these moments of letting go they're actually there. So, yeah.
Yes, very helpful.
Very big.
Yes. So thank you. This has been just lovely. And as always, I always like to say when I get through how much I enjoy this is just so wonderful. And I'm so glad that even though, Sherry and Ashwini are abroad, that we can continue. I mean, I'm just so grateful that as a community, we continue, and it's just great.
Yeah. We're not skipping any beats here. So, yeah.
That's right.
For all of us. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Alicia.
Okay.
Thanks, Alicia. And I'm going to bring on our next caller, Chris.
Okay.
Alrighty, next caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Bill.
Hello, Bill.
Hey, this is the first time I've been in the queue in a while, so I'm glad to be here. When I looked at the recall a time when you let go,
okay.
It was interesting because it started off with what dropped in was, geez, I've let go of this, I've let go of that. And then I want to say ego took over, because it was like, yeah, I've let go of expectations of what a mother should be, what a wife should be, what a child should be to their parent, what an employee should be, and what in-laws should be. And so ego is having this wonderful trip of seeing what a great person you are and being able to let go and let people be, who they are.
What a fine, outstanding human you are, yeah.
Yeah, what a fine, outstanding human you are, according to these standards. And then what dropped in was, but you know what? This person or ego doesn't let go of expectations for this person and who this person ought to be.
Uh-huh.
So even though ego gets an ego trip and being able to say others don't have to fit its expectations, It really does a lot of pressure and self-hate, like what we talk about.
Yeah.
Where it just says, but you need to be a parent like this, and you need to be a good adult child to your parents, and you need to be a good employee, and this is what that means, and so forth. And what's interesting is just sitting with that, what dropped in was, goodness, this is a big source of where this person gets angry, or ego gets angry, right, when it possesses this person, because all the identities that it places upon this person are not being fulfilled, and so ego's dissatisfied.
Yeah.
And yeah. So in the midst of doing all of this homework, what dropped in was a simple little thing is just in family life where there was a task that looked like it had to be done. My wife did the work, and she had, her ribs were broken from an accident. And so ego was all upset that my wife moved this item without seeking help, because it wants to love her and make sure that she's safe and protected. But
sure.
She did this.
Yeah.
So it's dumping on her. And then it was dumping on my son, who left the item out in the location that it was in.
Uh-huh.
And
so the standards in full effect in all directions, basically.
Yeah, it was just like firing off, you know, and it was like,
yeah.
But what was great is being able to see all of that and say, wow, look at how, again, this all comes back to what ego's expectations are for this person. If by really sitting with that, and I did a two-handed recording on it, what I saw was that ego was really upset with this person for not having gone out and done that work that got ahead. So it all comes down to this self-hate. And if I look even deeper, what I see is there's a belief that there has to be an identity in order to operate in this world. How do I have a relationship with the people around me? Well, there has to be an identity, right?
Yeah.
And I know that that's false, because if I just practice, when I practice being this here and now, you know, this here and now is adequate unto itself, not just me, but, you know, the truth is that everything worked out fine. And in that moment, my wife did take care of something that, even though she had broken ribs, it didn't hurt her, and she probably managed that just fine without, you know, hurting herself. But ego doesn't like that.
Conditioning took exception to it, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and it comes down to this whole... I think it's like what you were saying about the swimming and getting in the water is, from the armchair, it's easy to identify that there is a belief, that I have a belief, that ego has a belief, that there has to be an identity in order to operate in this world.
Yeah.
And yet it's that's in the armchair. But in the day-to-day operation or the day-to-day life is living that out.
Yeah.
And that's...
embodying it, as we say. Yeah. Yeah, because so there you are. You're in the armchair or wherever we are, right? And an insight drops in like that, right? We get a moment of clarity which reveals a part of how life works, right? A part of how we are causing ourselves to suffer, as we say, right? So we can see that the setup in that is that, you know, we, in order to get along in life, we can't just leave it to life. We can't leave it to, I think as we sometimes describe it, that old bumbler God to do life, right? There has to be an identity there, right? And we get a sense of that. And then, you know, I think that puts us right back with Alicia, right? We get a sense of kind of a big piece of what's going on and how things are working, how the attention is manipulated in favor of conditioning. And then it's a question of, okay, can I find those places in life where that's active, where that's going on, and then in those places begin to let go, right? Begin to move into a place of acceptance. And I really appreciate the way that you started us off with how conditioning, egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, really is okay with that kind of, you know, you have an insight like that, and then it can try and lull us back to sleep with, well, you know, I really let go of that, and I let go of that, and I let go, right? And all the while, it's like building up the ego internally, right? It's like, well, I don't really have any difficulties with this anymore. and then when we really start to look a little closer, we go, oh my, that was just a smokescreen. Again, the fog that we need to move through to get through to that place of, here's what conditioning is actually up to.
A smokescreen is the identity of being that forgiving person, the person who is always trying to be that loving person to other people. And it's kind of funny because isn't that what we're practicing? We practice to be in this present moment and to experience the love that is in this moment and to be that out into the world. But what's interesting is that there is this subtlety, at least within me, there's this subtlety of like, but ego can get a hold of that, and the next thing you know is, oh, look how loving I am, when all the while ego is beating the snot out of this person.
Yeah.
Because it's loving others, but is it loving this person? And of course it's not. It's
that whole... You don't count.
Yeah, it's the whole, you know, our loving compassion is incomplete when it does not include others, ourselves, or the divine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then, as you pointed out, the standards are what creates the separation, right? That essentially, if there is a standard about behavior on another person's part or my part, either direction... Then it's like equal opportunity employer. And so if I have to meet a particular standard, right, then there's no reason that I'm the only one that needs to meet that standard, but everyone in my life needs to meet that standard.
Because it's a good standard, and therefore let's make it universal.
by the nature of it, it's a standard, and so everybody's gotta do it. You know, countries, organizations, individuals, the whole works. There's all kinds of requirements for how that all needs to go, and then every one of those are little ticking time bombs, you know, ready to go off as soon as they're. As soon as they meet some circumstance in which that standard is not being met, then, like you say, the self-hate gets launched at other people and at ourselves, kind of back and forth, just so we're not catching on to this notion that there's a standard that's in play there that's completely arbitrary. Like you mentioned, it's like, it sets off the suffering, but actually nothing's actually happened out there.
And I think what happens is when I practice, okay, I'm aware of this, I see this, I acknowledge it, this dynamic that's taking place, then what then kicks in is this thought, right? I might call it an emotion, but it's really a thought that kicks in that says, geez, now I just feel like I'm afloat. So if there is no standards and there's no identity out there, then I'm kind of like adrift in this moment.
Yeah.
And, what does it matter what I do in this moment? You know, whatever feels good. And that's what the thought runs through the mind. And it's like, no, again, it's ego flipping this around. It says you got to have standards. And then when it acquiesces, when it agrees that, all right, fine, you know, drop your standards, well, then there's this feeling of adrift.
Where does that leave you?
Right, well said. Where does that leave you? You'll never amount to anything. Oh, there's
exactly.
Ego.
But then you have no way of actually having an impact on the world or being in life, like you said. And for me in that place, it's a... we talk about, there's a number of different ways we describe it. So we need to encounter what we need to transcend, right? We need to encounter it first and then transcend it. And that in what you've described, what happens is we've encountered it, but we've not yet transcended it. Or we've seen it, but we've not yet seen through it. Something like that. And so, let's see, I might say something like, we don't yet have an understanding or a like a confidence in a new relationship to be able to dump the old relationship, right? The old relationship being with conditioned mind. And we're not quite sure what the new relationship is like, right? If we really had an understanding of that relationship and the joy that's there, you know, we would just drop conditioned mind in a hurry.
And I guess that's just it. I will continue to suffer with this until finally, like the little mantra that we say, you know, we're here to end suffering.
Yeah.
If anything's more important than ending suffering, we'll not end suffering. And I think that's kind of what it is. It's like, okay, well, if you're completely vulnerable and honest, there's some identities where it's like, oh, a little suffering's okay. You know what I mean? Keep this identity.
The door is open again. Well, a couple of fun ways to look at that. One is that it's actually kind of fun to be identified because letting go is such a hoot, is the only way I would describe it. And so once we really do get that idea that we're just going to undulate back and forth between those two, and we're not real concerned about the identified, disidentified duality, then it just gets so much easier. We can be identified and still aware of it, right, but not really suffering in that place. And then we can be all the way on the other side where we've completely let go and we're in that relationship of joy and bliss with life. And like that, where we really get it, that that's where we want to live our life, and that the conditioned conversation has nothing to offer me. There's nothing there for me.
Wow.
And so I'm not tempted to move my attention back to it when it does whatever it does. And like that, yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm mindful of our time.
Yes,
I feel like I burned out all your time.
Okay. So. Well, that's what we're supposed to be doing, so perfect. Well, thank you, Bill.
Appreciation. And thank you. I appreciate you taking the call. This is great. All right. Take care. Gasha.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Bill. And there was just so much in there. But, you know, what dropped in for me as the two of you were talking is that it seems like what Bill was describing was staying in the process of inquiry. Right, so he first sees that, you know, conditioning is projecting onto others something that it says that I don't have, and then you see that, and then you keep looking, and then you see, oh, there's this, you know, I think what he says there, he saw like a belief that there has to be an identity to operate in this world, and he could have stopped there, but then he keeps looking and keeps looking and keeps looking, and I think as we've probably been talking about throughout this whole call, like, seeing the process deeper and deeper allows us to catch it earlier and earlier.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, and like Alicia was pointing to, that's the mystery. We're at that point, we're living in the mystery.
Yeah, so. Instead of the belief of the known.
Exactly. Yeah. Perfect.
All right, so this brings us to the end of this show, Chris.
And all right.
Our assignment for today, describe your spiritual life. Write and or draw your answer.
All right, very good.
All right, thank you, Chris.
Thank
we'll
you, Bob.
Tomorrow.
All right, sounds great. Take care, everyone.
All right, bye-bye.